ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद।
जय
अद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद। श्री चैतन्य चरितामृत आदि लीला चैप्टर 1 टेक्स्ट 92 ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद। तार मध्ये मोख बांछा कैतब प्रधान जाहा होते कृष्ण भक्ति होय अंतर्धान। तार मध्ये मोख बांछा कैतब प्रधान जहा होते कृष्ण भक्ति होय अंतर्धान। तार मध्ये मोख भंश कैतव प्रधान जहा होते कृष्ण भक्ति होय अंतर्धान। The foremost process of cheating is to desire to achieve liberation by merging into the Supreme. For this causes the permanent disappearance of loving service to Krishna. Purport, the desire to merge into the impersonal Brahman is the subtlest type of atheism. As soon as such atheism disguised in the dress of liberation is encouraged, one becomes completely unable to traverse the path of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This verse, those of you who have carefully studied Srimad Bhagavatam can understand that this verse refers to the Kaitav cheating, which is mentioned at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam as being rejected herein. Herein means in Srimad Bhagavatam, Atra. This is part of a broader discussion. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is having made his Mangalacharan at the beginning of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, auspicious invocation. Mangalacharan hoy Trividabik Prakar Vastu Nidesh Ashivad Namaskar. So the Mangalacharan consists of three categories: establishing the topic which is to be discussed, offering blessings to the readers or hearers. By reading this or hearing this, you will be benefited in such and such a way. And namaskar, offering obeisances to the object of worship. So after the Mangalacharan, the next few chapters describe in more detail the subject of that Mangalacharan. So one of the verses therein, famous verse, Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityanandau Sahodito Gauro Deye Pushpavantau Chitro Shando Tamo Nudo. I offer my obeisance to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda, who are just like the sun and the moon, who have arisen simultaneously on the horizon of Gouda, West Bengal. to wonderfully bestow benediction upon all. So they rise like the sun and the moon, and they dissipate the darkness. Tamaha. They dissipate the darkness. So what is that darkness that is being described here? Ajnana. In the verse, just two verses before this, Ajnana tome nam kohiye kaitav. The darkness of ignorance comes under the category of cheating. And what is that kaitava? What is that kaitava, cheating, described in Srimad Bhagavatam? Dharma, artha, kama, mokha, bancha, adishab. The desire for dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, it's all cheating. Well, that's all the Vedas. All the Vedas, what's there? Dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And Vyasadev, he is called Vyas because he divides the Vedas. And he compiles the Mahabharata, the fifth Veda. And he compiles Vedanta Sutras, which is a commentary on the Vedanta, the Upanishads. And having done all that, he compiles the Srimad Bhagavatam and begins it by saying that whatever I told you before, sorry to tell you, but actually it was just all cheating, that's all. And that's the whole Vedic culture. It's all revolves around or is dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And it's all cheating. And Srila Prabhupada, he again and again stated that he wants to revive and re-establish Vedic culture. Why is that? Because he wants to cheat everyone with dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. The reason is to promote bhakti, because Vedic culture is conducive to bhakti. Even now in India, especially in places like this, which are not so modernized as big cities like Bangalore. It's not far from here, but there's a big difference between Bangalore and Salem. Even now we can see even in Bangalore, there's a lot of Vedic culture going on. The old Sri Vaishnavas and Madhvas and Smartas, they're continuing with their culture in many ways. And what else is there? Lingayats is not Vedic culture. Well, it's anyway. This Vedic culture is still going on in India to some extent, and if you come from the West, you can see to what an extent it is. How here in India, it's more conducive for Krishna consciousness than, for instance, Russia or Welling in merry old England. It's more conducive, what to speak of Croatia or other such places. So that Vedic culture is conducive to Krishna consciousness. Even I'm saying in the middle of the lecture here, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. If I had to speak this in England, I'd have to explain each word. But here I don't have to, because it's somewhat understood. So that's just an example. This culture is very suitable for devotional service, but the culture is not only devotion. It's, after all, it's in the material world. If everyone was following completely the essence of Vedic culture, which is Krishna bhakti, then we wouldn't be here in the material world anyway. We'd be in the spiritual world. We're here in the material world because we don't want to do Krishna bhakti. So Vedic culture It's the original bridge preaching by Vyasadeva. That you follow this culture and you can be a good person by doing dharma. So people feel, yeah, I like to be good. That's good. Okay. And you'll get wealth. Oh, good. And you can enjoy yourself. Good. And when you get fed up of it all, then you can get moksha. Well, okay. So it's all set up by Krishna, actually. He sets a chaturvarnyam maya srishtam. He sets up this Vedic culture. But the object is vaidaisya sarvairahameva vedyaha. The object is Krishna, the object in the Veda. Veda means to know Krishna. Otherwise it's not vidya. It's ajnana. Here it's the ajnana. It's the darkness of ignorance. But Vyasadeva promotes that culture in the Vedas. Vyasadeva means he's an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, and he deliberately gives this culture, which is meant for going to Krishna, but it's mostly dominated by karmis with a few jnanis. Karmis means those who want to enjoy this material world, but in a pious way. They want to follow dharma. And a few jnanis. And they're all rascals. Especially the Mayavadis, because they deny Krishna. They may be very good in many ways. Actually, they are good in many ways. If we say that someone, they have faith in the Vedas, very good. They want to stop animal slaughter, cow slaughter, very good. The new chief minister of Uttar Pradesh is a sant, a sadhu. And immediately he's closing down slaughterhouses. Very good. Definitely is very good. Very good. They have faith in the Ganga and Gau, cow. There's so many good things. They're the best people. I mean, we say that India is more suitable for self-realization, because the culture here is conducive. People have some respect for devotees of Krishna, which is not very common elsewhere. Many people they like and appreciate if people are chanting in Sanskrit and protecting cows, and just the opposite. In the Western countries, they think protecting cows is crazy. Cows, you eat them. That's what they think. Horrible. So the Mayavadis, they're the best people in many ways. Many of them, they like us also, even though we don't like them. So that means Vedic culture, what we have at the present time, means all the pious Hindus, which many of you here, you are pious Hindus. Pious means some inclination toward this God. Otherwise, how have you joined this Krishna consciousness movement? And some impiety mixed also, because after all, it's Kali Yuga. But everyone is deeply affected by this impersonal idea. Very prominent in India today. And then there are Madhvas and Sri Vaishnavas who their culture is against, specifically predicated or based on opposition to Shankaracharya's Advaitavad. First of all, Ramanuja, and then Madhva came. And they propagated bhakti, but it was very much on the basis of rejecting Advaitavad or Mayavad. That's the whole basis on which they make their scriptural presentations. Their most important scriptural commentaries are on the Vedanta Sutras, in which they don't just write a commentary on the Vedanta Sutras, presenting their own idea or their own understanding, but they do so specifically addressing the points of Shankara, who in this Kali Yuga has presented what we hear in the Gaurīya Vaiṣṇava Sampradaya, based on Chaitanya Charitamrita, called Mayavad, but which is more widely known as Advaitavad, Kevaladvaitavad. The idea of Shankara, that the jiva, atma and paramatma, they're the same, you just have to realize it. Ultimate reality is devoid of all qualities, devoid of form, devoid of name, impersonalism. No, people in India, especially the Hindus, tend to be pious compared to people elsewhere, but they're very much affected by this worst cheating, which is mokabancha, the desire to be liberated from material life. And even they may respect devotees, or they may be devotees. We see Sri Vaishnavas and Madhvas today, even the staunchest of them. I don't find anyone who has such a clear understanding of what is right and what is wrong in this regard. I don't find like Prabhupada. You won't find. Because even the great scholars and apologists of the tradition in the modern age, they all say, oh, Vivekananda, very good. They all say. Even this B.N.K. Sharma, if you know, he's the great English voice of the Madhva Sampradaya in the modern age. He died about, how many years ago? 10, 15 years ago. Even he praises. And he's so strong, Madhva. Madhva means Tunis. Everyone will praise. Prabhupada could clearly understand. This is not correct. Even he wrote about them, their mission in so many ways, without putting their name directly. But he wrote that what they call themselves the followers of Shankara, but Shankara would be disgusted with them. Murgi mission. He apparently, I haven't seen that, but apparently I heard that from many years ago, and even yesterday I read something about that. That many years ago in Bengali, Srila Prabhupada wrote an essay called Murgi Mission. Murgi means chicken. Because there's a certain mission founded by the Swami, whose name I just said, who they keep chicken farms, and their sannyasis also eat chicken, among other things. Not here in South India. In Tamil Nadu, it's very much respected, but the sannyasis here, they don't. They're vegetarian, but the original orthodox sannyasis of their sampradaya eat everything. It's all Brahman, Anna. Anyway, I don't know how they justify it. I don't want to even think about it. But everyone's affected. Practically, we see, even now, if any young man usually becomes spiritually interested, someone from a Hindu background, what will they do? They'll get some books of Vivekananda, isn't it? They say, oh, now I'm feeling spiritual, so let me get some books of Vivekananda. And they get completely messed up. Completely. Better to play football than read Bhagavad Gita. And you can get some strong muscles by playing football. And that's better. And so on and so on. And eat meat. Directly, he says. Tells them, eat meat. You have to get strong. Indians are too weak. We need strong bodies. Nayamatma bala. What is that? Nayamatma balena hina. You can't understand the Atma without strength. Vivekananda quotes from Katha Upanishad. Strength doesn't mean you have big muscles, fool. It means spiritual strength to overcome the ignorance. So there are so many misunderstandings come from this desire for liberation. And they think the Guru is God. They all think that. The Guru is God. We're all God. We're all. Even their understanding of the word Leela, they think everything in the world is Leela. They don't think, because everything's spiritual, so it's all Leela. So the pig is eating stool, and then you may become a pig in the next life, and then it's all Leela. They don't distinguish between material and spiritual, which is the first teaching of Bhagavad Gita, to distinguish between the Atma, that which activates the body, and that which is mundane. The first teaching, they got it all messed up right from the very beginning. They don't understand the difference. So this idea, everyone is God, it's simply demoniac, that's all. Because jaha hoite krishna bhakti hoi antardhan, they think that it's all one, and so... then how are you going to surrender to Krishna if you're already Krishna? Or Krishna is just another manifestation of the same oneness. Then you won't surrender to Krishna. Where's the question of surrender? Surrender means to accept he is the supreme, he is the master, I am the servant. And if you don't want to surrender to Krishna, then namang duskrishna murha prapadyante naradhamaha mayaya parita jnana asurang bhavam ashritaha. If you don't want to surrender to Krishna, then you're a rascal, dushkriti, fool, murha, lowest among mankind. Even if you're very learned and respected, you don't have any real knowledge. It's all covered by illusion. And you partake of the nature of demons. So what happened? This Vedic culture. Actually, Shankaracharya, He's very much praised as the savior of Hinduism. He revived. Of course, there was no such word even as Hindu at the time of Shankara. The word came into play, it seems, with the Muslims who came. And there was no Islam. No, there was no Islam at that time. That was still to come. So they made the word. There's no such word, but anyway, it's become a popular one. He saved the Hindu culture. So he did in many ways. He did a lot to combat Buddhism. But actually, if you see, he was more against the karma mimamsa than. But Buddhism was also very prominent at the time. They say Shankara drove Buddhism out, but it seems to me that the Muslims had a lot to do with it also. Anyway, that's a historical question. But this Vedic culture he revived, but in this perverse way, with this idea that, dharma, artha, kama, it's there in Shastra, but moksha, but what does moksha mean? He gave the idea that moksha, mukti, that means merging into oneness. It's not merging. Brahman, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mitya. Brahma, that which is spiritual, that is real, and this world is false. which immediately refutes his own philosophy. Because there's two-ness there. Kevala Advaita means only oneness. But his own, immediately, as soon as you say Brahma Satya Jagan Mithya, then you've got something, and then they bring up this highly, you could say sophisticated if it wasn't all a sham. It's a sophisticated philosophy, but it's sophisticated in the way that someone may make a sophisticated story to cheat you. So the whole idea, then there's paramarthic and vyavaharic, there's spiritual, and then in this world there's something which is just practical. But it's all nonsense. And the Vaishnava Acharyas have very clearly shown this to be nonsense in various ways. Srila Prabhupada's arguments against Mayavad, it's not that Prabhupada made them up, they're classic arguments which go back hundreds of years. For instance, if one person gets liberated, then everyone should get liberated because they're all the same. Or if Maya overcomes the Jiva, who's actually God, then illusion is greater than God. These are all classic arguments against Mayavad. So this Vedic culture is misdirected. Very good culture. Go on Tirtha Yatras, so respect the sadhus, worship the cow. Very good culture in many ways, but it's being misdirected. You can blame it on Shankara, you can blame it on Vyas if you like. He himself says, I cheated up to now. Yeah. But that's that is the Vedic culture that he gave. That you follow dharma, art, karma, you do yajnas, and then you do karma. Karma is performed for some material desire, then you come to a better standard of performing karma. Karma here means work according to the Vedic injunctions. And then by doing that without personal, then you come to a better standard, sarva karma akilam partha jnana parisamapyate. Then by doing karma you come to the level of jnana, and then jnana means understanding everything in this world is useless, so I should try to get released from it, and then ultimately come to the highest understanding, Vedaischa sarvaharameva vedyaha. All knowledge culminates in Krishna. So Krishna in Bhagavad Gita takes Arjuna on the whole Vedic journey. Karma, jnana, and bhakti. And yoga also is there. There's karma, jnana, yoga, and bhakti. So the idea is there, that Krishna gives the Vedas because people are materially desirous, that's why they're in the material world. So he gives them dharma, artha, and kama. These all operate within the material world. Of course, ultimately dharma means dharma se hi apavargyasya narto tayo pakalpate. What's the next line? What is that word? Narto dharmai kantasya kamo labhaya hismitaha. Ultimately, one should perform dharma for moksha, not for material gain or for sense gratification. But in that section in Bhagavatam, then when Vyasadeva states this, that dharma should be performed for apavarga, getting free from this material world, then he goes on to explain that what is that moksha? What is the supreme? Understanding Brahman. Brahman is understood. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan. Is understood in three phases. And the highest phase is Bhagavan. So that's all explained. That mukti means to serve Krishna. That's the ultimate level of understanding. Otherwise, the dharma and artha. Artha means economic development or getting some power and position. Artha Shastra of Charnakya. It's not just about money, but position, how to maintain the king, maintains his position. So dharma, artha, kama, fulfilling material desire in a manner that is not degrading. Although by its very nature it's degrading, but if one follows by dharma, so it's all within the material world. And then moksha, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, that stands apart. That's a spiritual desire. When one sees that this material world is all useless, then what should one do? Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jignyasu shreya uttamam. When one has seen that this whole material world, even if you go to the heavenly planets, it's all useless. There's suffering, even the heavenly planets. Then one should approach a spiritual master who will instruct one in the knowledge, Vedanta. When you, same idea, Vedanta. Been through all the Vedas, all this gata gatam kama kama labhante, going up to this heavenly planets, coming down again, going up again, coming. When you're fed up of that, then you, that's all going on under the Vedas. Then you come to Vedanta, Upanishads. Guru will teach that. But even therein, the idea of being spiritual without Krishna, it's another kind of cheating. To be happy in this material world, the very idea is a kind of cheating. Vyasadeva is doing it. He explains himself. He opens up the Bhagavatam, first verse glorifying Krishna. And the second verse says, okay, this is the real thing. Whatever I gave before, it's all cheating. And you may think, oh, hey, what's going on there? And then he explains himself in chapters 4 and 5 of the first canto. It's cheating, and this is why. I'll explain it to you. I admit I gave all that stuff previously, but I wasn't very happy. And Narad kindly came and instructed me why. Because I hadn't directly explained the glories of the Lord. I'd put in some little bits and pieces there. That's bridge preaching. That's what they nowadays call bridge preaching. You can give a whole lot of stuff which is appealing to people who are somewhat pious about something about Ayurveda or astrology or something like that. And then you put in a little bit something about Krishna. And think that they might, but they're not going to get the point. If you talk 23 hours, 59 minutes about everything else except Krishna, and 1 minute you say, oh, and yeah, Krishna, yeah, and then astrology. They're not going to get the point. You write a whole book about, I met this guru and that guru, and one of them said to chant Hare Krishna, and you don't get the point. So Vyasadeva said, I already did that. It's all cheating. And this is the real thing. The Srimad Bhagavatam. I was wrong. He taught many good things. You do austerities, you do japa, you chant mantras, you protect cows. So very good things, but Bhagavad Bhakti Hinasya. Jati Shastra Japastapa Apranas Yaiva Dehasya Mandanang Lokaranjanam. All these good things. Without devotion to Krishna, it's like decoration of a dead body. Shocking example. If you see from a distance someone is sitting down and decorated very nicely, very nice clothing, and so many gold ornaments. One time I was in Puri, I met this leader of the dieters, the Shabaras. Yeah. So he was sitting there with his so much gold on his body. I never saw anyone wearing anything. So much gold. Must have been quite heavy to carry and all that. And it was hot also, it was Rathiatra season, so gold is heating. It's so much gold, it must have been worth crores and crores of rupees. So if you see from a distance someone who's decorated, and you say, oh, that looks very nice, you go a little closer, you see it's a dead body. Ugh. You thought it was nice, but when you get close, you say, oh, dead, ugh, dead body, ugh, horrible. So it's like that. Without Krishna bhakti, these things, they are good things. Japa, mantras, going on pilgrimage, there are good, no doubt, very good things. But without Krishna bhakti, there's no life. There's no life in it. So if we take this to be the essence, then we miss the point. If we think the japa and the mantras, that's the point. But the point is Krishna. But they miss the point. And they think the idea is to get moksha. Vyasadeva misled them. The Vedas, the Puranas, they're full of statements where he's almost afraid to say the real thing. Or he says it, but then after that, just like in Brahma Vaivarta Purana, if we only read the parts, or we only have the parts translated in English, that are glorifying Krishna and Krishna Bhakti, but in the same Purana you'll find glorification of Ganesh. In Mahabharata you'll find this glorification of Krishna as supreme, and then elsewhere you'll find Krishna glorifying Shiva as supreme. Becomes very confusing. At the end, Vyasadeva says, Actually it's Vishnu. Vede Ramayane Chaiva Purane Bharate Tata Adavante Cha Madhye Cha Hari Sarvatra Giyate. Not Hara. He says Hari, not Hara. All the Vedas, they're meant for glorifying Hari, but in the already people, they already read Hari is Hara and Hara is Hari. So then they can't get a clear idea. So in the Veda you'll find different places. Shiva is glorified, and Vishnu bows down to Shiva and says, oh, you are the greatest. And Linga is so big that Brahma can't find the top of it, and Narayan takes the form of Varaha and can't find the bottom. All stories like this. And people think, oh, Parvati, she wants to marry Shiva, and all the rishis come and say, don't marry him, he's just a vagabond. Doesn't even have a home, and he's all in all these snakes and ashes from the crematorium. Why don't you marry Vishnu? She says, no, Shiva's most renounced. I want to marry him. And Vishnu, he's a sense enjoyer. So I have all stories like this. And then people think, oh, really? And they can't work it all out. One place says Shiva is supreme, another place says Indra is supreme, another place says Agni is supreme. And they think, oh, well, I guess I can be supreme also. There's so many who are supreme. And there doesn't seem to be one God. So you just merge into oneness, and or it's self-defined religion, any way you want to do. That's a modern thing. That's come from Vivekananda, Ramakrishna. Otherwise, so many rituals to perform every day of the week. Maybe some of the older people know. I don't know. I think Tuesday is for Hanuman, is it? And Monday is for Vishnu. I don't know what it is. Different days you worship different gods. And then there are different tithis, just like we have Ekadashi for worshipping Vishnu, and different tithis for worshipping different, and different months. In Kartik, we worship Krishna, and Shravan also, we worship him. And that's also for Shiva. Like this, there's so many rules, you have to do this, and you have to do that. And the ultimate idea is to just merge into some oneness. You enjoy yourself. Enjoy yourself as you like. And when you're fed up, then you just merge into the oneness. Or you can enjoy your life. And then at the end, then you go to Varanasi and you die there. Then you get moksha. Now there's Gobra, what's that saying? Suratma, what is it? Suran or something? Suratma Suran or Kashima Maran. Something like that. You Kaman. Surat makes, so you eat nice food in Surat. Surat, that's a famous city in Gujarat, famous for cloth and diamonds. Two things. So people, you have a happy life, and then now they made one train. Was that the Tapti Ganga Express? So you can get a train from, so when you feel you're going to die, get on train, go to Varanasi, and you die there, and you get moksha. So have everything good, everything nice. And people, they're really, moksha, that's it. That's the real thing. And if you live in Varanasi, then you get it all. You can live a happy life, and you die there, and you go to, you don't go, what happened? You merge into the oneness. You become Brahma. You get moksha. That's the thing, to get moksha. Become free from repeated birth and death. Or if you don't go to Kashi, then you can go to the Himalayas. Prayena deva munaya svavimukti kaman monang charanti vijane. This Prahlad Maharaj says, the people, they go to the mountains, they observe vows of silence. They're very serious. You've got to be serious to go up to some mountain and to do to get away from the world. They're very serious about getting liberation. You can't say they're not serious. As Prabhupada noted, the Mayavadi sannyasis, they're much more strict in following rules and regulations and much more austere than the Vaishnavas. They're very strict about it. I just read there was in the early 20th century, on the bank of the Ganga, they were making, in Varanasi, they were making some, they wanted to make a new temple, so they're excavating the ghat and taking out the earth and everything, and they found some hole inside, and there was a yogi in there. He said, "What's going on?" And then he understood that it's Kali Yuga. Ram's not in Ayodhya anymore. Oh, and he understood. He jumped up and jumped in the Ganga, and he was never seen again. So it's a very serious yoga. He'd been meditating there since Treta Yuga, some millions of years. He just thought, I'd just do a little meditation. And he woke up in Kali Yuga. Very serious. Yogis are very, very serious. But Naparata Nishtha, Prahlad Maharaj, he criticizes. They're very interested in self-realization. They're very serious, but they're not interested in others. Or they, even they may be trying to help others. That's a great quandary or contradiction in Buddhism. That people are praying to Buddha and they have deities of Buddha. And they think Buddha's going to bless them so that they can get nirvana. But if he got nirvana, then he's not around to give you nirvana. Right? If you get nirvana, then you're not, what do? You're not around. So how is he going to bless you? That means he himself didn't get nirvana. And then how is he going to give you nirvana? It's a great contradiction. Why do they have deities of Buddha or think that he can help you by praying to him? Of course, mostly people don't pray to him for nirvana. They pray to him that my pig can have plenty of children and things like that. Mostly Buddhists are big pig eaters, from what I've seen. So this whole idea that we're going to get liberation. At the same time, they're very most those who are after liberation, they're mostly very attached to Shiva. They like Lord Shiva very much. They feel some affection for him. Even they chant Shivoham, I am Shiva. But they feel some affection for Shiva and for Vishnu also. But their idea is that when you get liberated, then there's no affection left. That you just, there's nothing. Just bliss, that's all. How is there bliss? On what basis is there bliss? How do you experience bliss? They can't explain it, so they just say, well, it's not explainable. That's all. If you can't explain something, you just say, no explanation. That's all. You feel bliss. You don't have any personal identity left, so you're not really a person, but you still feel bliss. But how can you feel bliss? Well, anyway. You can't understand it. No, I can't understand it. You're right. I never could understand it. It doesn't really make any sense. It makes a lot of sense if we say that the transcendental names, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna, that is spiritual bliss. But just bliss, with nothing to do, nothing to see, nothing to say, just vibrating. Not even vibrating, because there's nothing. Just Brahman. And there's nothing else. Only Brahman, which is full of bliss. But it's supposed to be nirguna. But that full of bliss is also one quality. So anyway, I don't understand. It's called the last snare of Maya. That if one can see that this material world is miserable, but fail to surrender to Krishna, the last snare of Maya. Mayavadis are very good at analyzing the situation of this material world. They can give a very good analysis how material attachment binds us to this world, the desire for material enjoyment binds us. They're very, very good at seeing that. We can quote them, punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. Quote them, that again and again birth, again and again death. So they've got a very good insights into the nature of this material world that is completely miserable. So they're already halfway out of Maya, or they've already seen the problem, but they don't get the right solution. A major mistake. Instead of becoming attached to Krishna, they see attachment is the cause of bondage. So they think, well, become non-attached. Okay, that's all right. But then they won't become attached to Krishna because enviousness of Krishna is there. That's the nature of this material world. We come here due to envy of Krishna. And so it seems, if we say, well, attachment to Krishna, that's also an attachment. So that seems to them to be very good, very nice. Yeah, that makes sense, but it doesn't make sense. It's catches them. Just they've studied the Vedas. They've seen the material world is miserable. They got it right, everything right. Take shelter of the Ganga. Take shelter of the Vedic mantras. Do all the right things. But they don't find Krishna. And even Vyasadev is misleading them. There's a statement Narottam Das made. I'll read it out. From Narottam Das, is one of his songs. Tirtha Jal Pabitra Gun Dikhi Ache Purano Sheshab Bhakti Prabancham. Yeah, we got the same word here. Cheating, huh? Kaitav, Vanchan, same thing, cheating. Vaishnava padodak shamanahe eshab jate hoy banchita puran. He says that when I first came across this, I was shocked. Because it says that the waters of the holy places, they're very pure, purifying. So when I first came across that, yeah, okay, right, yeah, I accept that. But then it's written in the Puranas. But Narottam Das says this is all cheating. It's cheating from bhakti. Because in all the waters of the holy places put together, they're not on the same level as the water from the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, which can fulfill all one's genuine spiritual desires for bhakti to Krishna. So definitely Ganga, she's coming from the lotus feet of Vishnu. Puranas praise her as such, but they praise that you'll be freed from all sins. But that's not the point. To be freed from all sins, that's not the point of it. The whole idea, I'm suffering in this material world because I'm sinful. Let me get free of sins. I'll act piously. I'll go to the Ganga, take bath in the Ganga. I'll get free from... That's not the point. Ganga, she is Vishnu Padi. She comes from the lotus feet of Vishnu. The lotus feet of Vishnu, it's... A materialist will say, oh, very good, I'll get free from all my sins. Devotee thinks, let me serve here. Let me take from Ganga the benediction of serving his lotus feet. Of course, Ganga, she comes to this world, that is her mercy to clear people from sins, so that they can become of pure consciousness and eligible for bhakti. Yeshang tondagatang papam jananam punya karmanam te dvanda moha nirmukta bhajante mangriravrataha. People, when they've become free from sins, when they engage in pious activities, then they're eligible for bhakti. So, Vedic culture is very good. You can get freed from sins. You can perform pious activities, all preparing us for bhakti. But there's another thing also. Te dvandva moha nirmukta. The one must be free from misconceptions. And there, you see, all the freedom from sins, pious activities, and then comes the misconception that we have to become one with God. So everything gets put off track. All that they're doing, all their service to cows, and giving charity, reciting mantras, performing pious activities, doing all the right things, but all with a misconception, last snare of Maya, that we'll follow this culture, we'll be happy in this world, and then when we're ready, maybe this life, another life, then we'll get liberated from this world. So this Vedic culture is very good. We should promote that. Anything else outside this Vedic culture is horrible. Vedic culture is undoubtedly the best, but then we have to know the goal of it also. You have to have clear understanding. Not that we get caught in Maya in the name of Vedic culture. So how to overcome this, that's the great. How to give the clear conception. Here in India at least, people, many, they're close to Krishna, and as much as they like that culture, they respect that culture. So give the clear conception by book distribution, building this temple, having festivals so people will come, they'll be attracted to the process of devotional service. There are so many means. Dramas are very good. Getting the point of preaching to people, telling people that this idea of impersonal liberation, that's not the real thing. The real thing is surrender to Krishna. Gurukul, train the young boys from the beginning so they can be preachers, or at least they themselves will have a clear idea. Krishna is the supreme, I have to surrender to him. And first thing ourselves, we have to be convinced that we have to know what is the difference between general Hinduism and becoming pious, desiring ultimately to merge into some supposed impersonal supreme. We have to come beyond that and understand clearly that we are meant for surrender to Krishna and nothing else. This is the biggest cheating. The idea of merging or becoming liberated from this world. Even the Vaishnav Sampradayas, they say mukti is the goal of life. Of course, they define it in terms of service to Krishna, but the very use of that word, it gives a self-centered concept. What am I gonna get? Whereas bhakti, the word itself means self-abnegation, not self-negation, but self-abnegation. It means that putting what Krishna wants, Krishna tekila chishta, what Krishna wants. I'm only meant for serving Krishna. There's a just in the word, there's a different concept. Therefore, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, he wanted to change this verse, Muktipade, the description in Bhagavatam, wanted to change that to Bhaktipade. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no. Mukti is also coming from him. That's one of his glories. The Supreme Lord, that muktim dadati karhichit nasma bhakti yogam. He'll give mukti. Well, mukti, okay. Bhakti, not so very easily. Because by bhakti, Sri Krishna akarshani chasa. Krishna himself becomes attracted. He becomes obliged to the devotee. Aham bhakta paradhina. He becomes obliged to the devotee. He comes under the control of the devotee. So the glories of bhakti, that is the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam, which begins with the statement that the greatest cheating, well, it rejects all cheating in the name of dharma. Dharma projita means dharma artha kama moksha projita. And this is explained here in Chaitanya Charitamrita that the biggest cheating is the desire for liberation. So, Hare Krishna. Any question about that? Anyone? Yeah. Yes, please, go ahead. Do we have another mic? Okay, go ahead. And then I'll repeat the question after, so you can translate that also. Yeah. Mayavadis do bhakti, yeah, but they misunderstand. They don't do bhakti.
Like Ramesh Baba, he helped to respond so much. Devotees praise him.
Well, you're giving the name of a particular person who doesn't consider himself to be a Mayavadi. He's not as he's a devotee by common definition. Actually, he's severely influenced by that. You see, even the devotees, they may become influenced by that. In his case, it's not a case of a Mayavadi doing bhakti. It's a case of a bhakta being actually a Mayavadi. It's round the, you got it round the wrong example. Mayavadis also do bhakti. Yeah, they'll also... In fact, if anyone's chanting Vishnu Sahasranam these days, it's mostly the smartas who are trainee Mayavadis. You can't really be a Mayavadi without being a sannyasi, according to... Well, there's Neo Mayavad of Vivekananda who made it open to everyone. But yeah, they also speak of bhakti. They also say bhakti is very good, but their conception of what it is defined by their misunderstanding. So they do bhakti, but that's... What is... Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, dhik tara krishna bhakti. He says, dhik is translated in English as fai, which is an uncommon word. It means to hell with, or just like the opposite of jai, is ah. Their so-called Krishna bhakti, ah. He doesn't like it. He says that the arrows shot by his enemies, Vishnu's enemies shoot arrows at him, but the prayers of the Mayavadis to him hurt him more. Because it's duplicitous. Yeah. Then? Could you speak a little loudly, please? Yeah. This is a very important point. In the Western world, Srila Prabhupada has given the understanding and process of devotional service, but you don't have the culture. As it is still, to some extent, in India. It's not much, but it's still noticeably different to what's in the West. Yeah, so can you? Can you progress on the path of bhakti without adopting more and more this culture? It's difficult. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce this culture, Varnashram Dharma. We live in this world according to some culture. The culture of the modern West is hedonistic. It's not at all suitable for bhakti. Not very conducive. At all. Just the opposite. So, Hare Krishna. All glories to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Jai Sri Sri Gauranithai. Hare Krishna.